I haven't used this one yet, but if anybody asks me how and Dean, had a child, I might just flip it back to them and say, "Well, tell me about the night when you conceived your child."
So tell me all
It's
about
not
your
appropriate.
experience.
What position was you in? Yeah, I'd love to use that one. That'd be great, wouldn't it?
This is Gaydio Academy Voices.
So how long have you been with Proud to Be Parents?
So, yeah, I've been delivering Proud to Be Parents now for 18 years. I founded it way back in when, and adopted my son back in 2017 when he was 8 months old. And then I came on to Gaydio back in 2018 to talk about LGBT Adoption and Fostering Week, which is obviously what this week's all about, with the lovely Toby and Emma. And so it's a real change now that Toby's here as well as a parent.
Yeah, that is mad. I can't quite put my mind back into, where I was there at that point, but I can't imagine that I'd have been sat in this position now doing it the other way around.
Yeah, well, it's funny because back then it was I had to get the nap synced to when you needed me on to be speaking on the radio. So
right.
My little one was down for a nap while I was stood in the bedroom very quietly whispering into the radio about my
wow.
experiences and how important LGBT Adoption and Fostering Week actually is for our community. Because it is.
Yeah.
We need to be still representing, building awareness, raising understanding that we are here and that our aspirations can be parenthood in the future.
Yeah, definitely. Because I mean, that's one thing that I, I've mentioned before is when I was initially growing up, and I thought that wasn't an option for me, So I think it's so important to hammer that message home so people realise it's absolutely an option. It's more than an option. It's like it's people like you and I would thoroughly recommend it. And I think when thinking about routes to parenting, for me, that was adopting was really the only kind of route that we truly considered. Got friends that are parenting through in lots of different circumstances and stuff like that. But for me and for my husband, we're like, it has to be adoption. That's just the most sensible route to go.
Yeah, and like it is for many of our communities, isn't it? And I was like the same for me and my husband. We met over 20 odd years ago, and on our second date, we talked about, having children and what we wanted. And, way back then, we couldn't even get married. It wasn't possible for us to adopt children. And Section 28 was still obviously very, very much prevalent because obviously it stopped us getting the key information about our lives and et cetera.
Yeah.
But within my time, within my relationship with my husband, obviously the world's changed and shifted slightly, and that we were able to adopt, thankfully. And it really was a positive choice for us because it's the only way that we could see ourselves becoming a family.
Do you ever worry, Matt, that like there'll be regression on that front? Because I think that's something that's really relevant at the moment, where you sort of see that happening in certain aspects of society, and look at the struggles that trans people are going through at the moment. We've always said that the trans community is probably 20 years behind the sort of
LG
community.
Yeah.
And now it feels like there's further setbacks now rather than progress. There's further setbacks. And even when you look internationally at things happening, like in Italy,
yeah,
for example, there's some mad stuff going on over there. What do you think about that? Like, do you ever worry that there'll be regression in this country around, rights for LGBT parents?
I worry about there's a regression for rights for LGBT parents, but what I don't worry about is actually adoption of foster agencies changing their minds, because last year, 1 in 5 adoptions across the UK were to same-sex couples. So we're an ever-increasing, ever-growing community of individuals coming forward to become parents through adoption. And what we do bring is real understanding about the children who come through the care system's experiences, because many of us on our route to coming out have faced adversities, trauma, and microaggressions, and unconscious bias. And that really has an impact on you. And it's very, very similar to children that have come through the care system because of their past experiences. so we can really relate to them and actually support them in understanding about their past. And
I completely agree. One thing that we remember saying was, I know what difference feels like.
Yeah.
You know, so as the kid in the classroom who does have a different setup, whatever that is, you know, we know what that feels like. We know what it feels like to be different and how to support that and
navigate it as
even
well.
Even turn it into a positive.
Yeah.
And even turn it into a positive, potentially, you know, like, at one point I turned my difference into my career when, you know, setting Gadio up and stuff like that. It was turning it into a positive thing rather than looking at it as a negative thing.
And that's the real like resilience of our community though, isn't it? We always go for the positive angle of things. And I think that's why, again, we made really good parents because we're always there for the positive slant on things, always willing to champion, support, celebrate our adversities.
There's going to be so many trans people, myself included as well, who would really love to, you know, make, grow a family. And something like Proud to Be Parents is amazing. I'm so glad that you created this because there's going to be so many people in our community who are, oh my gosh, where do I turn to for this resource, for that resource? Where do I go? Talking to people who get it, who understand the community as well, it's a very different level, you know, of it's just on another level, really. And I feel like for me personally, I would love to, you know, first of all, find out what is the first step that anybody has to kind of like think about or know? What is that first step that they need to take?
From my perspective, it's to understand what route to parenthood you want, because there's for our community, there's a whole array of different routes, you know, from adoption, fostering, co-parenting, pregnancy, surrogacy. And then, you know, when you look at pregnancy, there's a whole array of different ways as well. So, you know, it's really deciding what routes are right for yourselves and then looking at it further. So if it is adoption, then it's making contact with what you perceive to be an inclusive, accepting, welcoming agency. And then going down, obviously, the various different stages within that process.
Wow.
Yeah, we had kind of calls with multiple agencies, actually, when we went through those sort of early stages where we sort of thought, right, who's going to be the right agency to support us through this? So I think doing things like that are probably important. And, you know, talking to organizations like Proud to Be Parents, definitely, you know, whether that's getting direct advice or them connecting you with people is hugely beneficial. And if you've got family and friends as well, you know, we spoke lots to, we were really, really, you know, quite from quite early stages, very open about the process that we were going on, because we wanted to get as much input and support as possible from as many people as possible. And there are times through our process where we've lent really heavily on people around us in terms of that kind of support, whether it's emotional or insight, practical childcare, you know, all sorts of stuff. I think it's really useful to talk.
Yeah. Definitely. And I'm just throwing in there, I think it's really useful to have that support network around you. And it doesn't have to be your family, it can be your found family as well, because many of us within the LGBT plus community, we don't have our biological families around us to help and support, which again, you know, refers back to children that come through the care system. That's very similar to themselves. So we really have that understanding of having others around us who champion us, who are like-minded people that we can go to for support, and don't be put off by that. You know, if that is your found family, you know, adoption services know that from our community, and actually really celebrate and champion that, because your support network is there for you regardless of who they are.
Just out of curiosity as well, how can people come and find you to get advice, to have a look at, you know, information, and how can we support Proud to Be Parents as well?
And so Proud to Be Parents, you can find out more from us from our website, which is all the W's dot proud to be parents, a two and a B dot co dot UK. And thankfully, you know, a lot of our regional adoption agencies like Adoption Council and Adoption Now also sponsor us because they recognise the services that we do provide to the community. And so they can get involved through those agencies as well. But we should be anywhere that you do look. We're always around Proud to Be Parents, and a lot of the regional Pride events too. We often co-create or host the family spaces as well. So yeah, get in contact, find out more. You know, we're happy to support along the journey. A lot of the work that we do is supporting individuals as they are going through the adoption and fostering journey or assessments, because lots of things are thrown up for us. You know, for some of us, as Toby was mentioning, it's a really nerve-wracking or, you know, therapeutic or cathartic experience. And, you know, we're always there, and we do have also a real plethora of understanding and knowledge. You know, I always talk about how I'm an independent panel member for Adoption Council, and I was actually part of Toby's approval at panel as well. So we do understand. And
they also do a very good bouncy castle and a never far away from a face painting stall.
Oh, that's perfect. You will definitely see me there for sure. Before we finish, you mentioned assessment. What kind of goes into an assessment, Matt?
So when you're going through the adoption process, there's various different stages, and part of that stage is completing a PAR, which is a personal report about yourself and all your strengths and what you bring to your family dynamics, your relationships, and a whole heap of other stuff, as well as pinpointing some potential vulnerabilities, but how you've overcome those and your resilience factors, etc. So that's all within this document called the PAR, and they can range from between 50 to 80 pages, and thank goodness your social worker writes that. But people like me that sit on a panel will read it and obviously assess whether an approval should be recommended or an approval of a match should be recommended. And it's a really important piece that goes with you, so that when you do get into the matching processes with your little one, that their social worker, the child social worker, will read it to see whether you're compatible with the child that they are looking to place from the local authority, etc. So yeah, it's a big document, but don't be put off by it. It's actually, I found it a really cathartic experience going through it with our social worker. And you sort of talk about things that you don't normally talk about on a day-to-day basis with your partner, because you're just living your life and cracking on. And so it's quite nice to sort of go back to, you know, the depths of your history.
Wow. It's a lot to think about. What about you, Toby? Tell me, how are you feeling during this process?
Yeah, the panel can be quite a daunting prospect, I suppose, because you probably have an idea in your mind of what that might be like. And Matt was on my approval panel, and this would be a much more awkward conversation now if we weren't approved. You know, you have in your mind something similar to The Apprentice boardroom or something, maybe with you know, lots of people sat around a table drilling you on questions and stuff like that, which, you know, there's some truth in that, in the sense that it is a panel. There are a number of people, a number of experts sat around making that decision, as was actually remote. It was on Zoom, which kind of helped things, actually, because just there's something about that, the physical kind of thing of seeing a load of people sat around a table is just a little more daunting, I think. But the thing to remember is that they're asking you questions to make sure that, you know, the right match is being made, and you should have been prepared pretty well by your social worker to get to this point. And I think my understanding is, you know, there's, and correct me if I'm wrong here, Matt, my understanding is that, you know, social workers are reluctant to put people forward to panel if they don't think the outcome is going to be positive. That's not to say that, you know, there's always success, you know, but I think you're unlikely to be put in a situation that you haven't been prepared for and aren't ready for.
That's really true. I don't think anybody's looking to set people up to fail. And, you know, the whole process is there to support along the way and check in and discuss and evaluate. And, you know, all those key points are to get to that point of panel where, you know, there is going to be a positive outcome. And sometimes there isn't, because things come up, more information comes to light, pieces of information can be missed because we're all human at the end of the day. But it's very, very few and very, very far between. And people shouldn't be bogged down with that, you know, that worry, I would say.
Yeah, absolutely. It's been really insightful to hear from both perspectives as well, you know, with the journey as a whole and all the resources that are available, which is really, really music to my ears and so many other people that are going to be listening as well. Because it's always hard but when you want to take that first step, but you don't know where to turn. And it's great to know about, you know, Proud to Be Parents. Straight away, people will be like, right, let's have a look online. Let's check this out. Let's get as much information as possible. And even things down to the different routes in parenting and the assessments and what's involved. It's good for me to be prepared for things. I hate the unknown. So for me, knowing like, okay, what the next steps are is quite reassuring to know that, okay, you're being guided and, you know, you're never going to be led astray. But it sounds very exciting, this whole process.
And it is really exciting. But I think one thing that we often overlook as our community is that when you become a parent, you are the most out you've ever been in your life. So if you're not that couple that show public displays of affection, not to worry about that, but your little one will out you at every turn. When you're in the supermarket getting your groceries and they're shouting, daddy, dada, and everyone looks around to be like, huh, what's that? You know, you are going to be the most out. I felt that when we used to go food shopping with our little one, it felt like you were changing the world one loaf at a time, because, you know, people would never see or would have seen an LGBT plus family before. And so, you know, I had a lot of pressure on me to think, right, we've got to change people's perceptions. So we've got to be all looking okay. The little one's got to be dressed and set in clothes, not be crying, not be out on a tangent, blah, blah, blah. You know, and after trying that for a few months, obviously, thank God, that all went away, because you've got to live your life. But, you know, you are going to be the most out, and that's okay as well, because, you know, it's not so daunting out there as sometimes it can feel.
And you find yourself suddenly very acutely aware of how little progress there's been made in some ways. Like if you go to a playgroup, it's going to be, if like I'm talking about just a regular playgroup at the, you know, village hall down the road kind of thing, it's going to be 12 mums with their kids. Like we never saw a dad at any of those groups that we went to. Obviously at things like Proud to Be Parents and stuff, yes, definitely. But if you're just going to, like, you know, the place down the road that does a play group, you find yourself suddenly feeling like, oh, maybe the world hasn't changed that much, because where are the dads here? You know, things like that. And then being added to the school WhatsApp group, and which again, weirdly, often is lots of mums and stuff. But you know, when we first introduced ourselves on that as well, you pretty much immediately have to kind of out yourself, because otherwise it gets really confused. Hold on, I thought he was the dad. So you just have to explain quite a lot. Wow. Very quickly. But yeah, I think that's something that you get used to over time. But yeah, as Matt said, if you're not the sort of person that, you know, that wears their sexuality on their sleeve kind of thing, is that a phrase? I don't know. Then yeah, there might be a few bumps that you need to kind of navigate.
And I think it's just preparing for that, though, isn't it? I very, very quickly got catch-all statements like, Austin's really lucky, he actually has two dads, just to stop conversations and going any further. Or when people asked about, well, how do you have a child? You know, it was just basically, it's none of your business. But, you know, things like that. It's just having catch-all little phrases ready to roll so that you're prepared for it, because, you know, that you won't be seeing as many LGBT plus parents and carers as the world would maybe see, or you would hope as well.
I haven't used this one yet, but if anybody asks me how and Dean, you know, had a child, I might just flip it back to them and say, well, tell me about the night when you conceived your child.
So tell me all it's about your experience.
What position was you in? Yeah, I'd love to use that one. That'd be great, wouldn't it?
That's really smart. Put that one in your phone, in your notes, just in case if you're ever thinking, right, what do I say? Yeah, having a little catalogue of things to kind of just like, as a, right, let's get out of this conversation quickly kind of thing. Very, very smart. Didn't even think about that.
Yeah, and the other thing that I think is just worth mentioning in terms of like that is just the importance of you and your partner. If you're, because, you know, you don't have to adopt as a couple. We've got friends that are single adopters, and wow, they're brilliant people, because that's a lot to take on, I think. But if you are adopting with your partner, you have to be so aligned, you know, like, obviously, not obviously you do, but you do have to be aligned as parents, generally, I think, because if one person's saying one thing and one person's saying the other, that's just going to be confusing for kids. But there's so much, you know, the process that you go through is, because that is so involved, I think it's really important, or you understand how aligned you are, I think. Even if there are things that are different, you kind of go, oh, okay. Like, it really exposes that stuff, or makes you realize, wow, yeah, we're really in sync here on stuff. Or, okay, we're not quite so in sync on these things. Where do we need to, what do we need to do to make sure that we are? And it can actually be quite useful in that sense. But I think that's really important.
It just preempts your thinking of how you're going to parent, doesn't it? So it allows you to actually get ahead of the game in a way, because you're already thinking about, this is how we're going to roll with these situations, et cetera, et cetera. So it does align you, if even if you wasn't at the beginning, I suppose.
Is there anything that we've missed that you think we should definitely add to this episode?
So I don't know about you, Toby, but in my son's school, they, you know, we've just come out of LGBT History Month, haven't we? And, you know, sadly, there wasn't real recognition of that within his primary school. You know, we are always trying to champion better perspectives, different narratives for our children. When I say our children, it's because I have a son through adoption, and then we also have two long-term children from foster care. And so we're always trying to ensure that there is better representation in primary schools and secondary schools, of course, but both of our sets of children are obviously still in the primary sector. How did it go in your children's school?
Yeah, that's a really good question. I mean, the first thing is, don't expect your kids to tell you too much about what happened at school, because no matter how hard you try, nothing happened all day. And what was your best part? Lunch. So, but we really try. And the school are quite, you know, good at communicating and stuff like that. But it is difficult sometimes to understand, you know, exactly the ins and outs of stuff. So actually, in terms of LGBT History Month, I'm not entirely sure, you know, and our kids are very young in terms of their sort of, you know, education journeys. I'm not sure too much was done around that. And you've only just made me realize, actually, like the significance of it. And one thing I would say is, and if they didn't, I know that they're really open to that kind of feedback and stuff. And that's something that we found very positive about the different educational settings that our kids are in, is that they are all really, really open to feedback and understand that they aren't going to know how to do everything 100% right all of the time, but are willing to go on that journey with you. And I think that's really important. There are some things that they're already doing brilliantly. Like we got a call the other day asking how we wanted them to go about talking about Mother's Day, which I thought was really, you know, relevant and insightful, because they might not have, you know, they might have just kind of gone ahead with the usual stuff that they do and make cards, and then the kids are there in this moment of like, I don't understand how to process this, and that could have been really difficult. So I think there's some stuff that I can tell, you know, they're really savvy about already, but there's stuff that, you know, there's work that can be done as well, which is probably still a hangover from things like Section 28 and stuff like that.
Yeah, definitely. Literally just before our conversation today, I was speaking to my son's school, trying to sort of say to them, why is it so important that you talk about LGBT History Month? You know, it's, you know, we need to change the narratives rather than just being like talking about two dad families or two mum families and blah, 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 blah. We need to be extending that narrative. And, you know, with Proud to Be Parents, we pump loads of stuff across social media. And, you know, we've got some key TV programs on CBeebies, which are like Operation Ouch, which has Dr. Bronx in it, who's a part of the queer community. We've also got Dr. Raja, does the Get Well Soon program. And these are key influencers in our children's life who are part of our community. And, you know, with the, obviously, the topic being around medicine this year's LGBT Issue Month, it was perfect opportunity just to go, look, this is what these programs are all about. This is what you're actually watching. Do you know the characters are? And not shying away from conversations just because it's got LGBT plus in it. Yeah, totally passionate about it, but definitely think schools need to be doing more.
Yeah, I think absolutely. And I really wish as well, growing up during Section 28, I genuinely wish that I had the tools, the knowledge and the education, because it would have set me up for a better future. And I think now, you know, things like learning about LGBTQ plus people, culture and history as well is going to absolutely help these kids to learn and understand each other and their parents and, you know, and their families. So it's such a vital tool that, you know, that schools really do take on board your feedback and they go, right, okay, let's make this right. Let's, you know, let's teach the children exactly what they need to know. Apart from that, is there anything else do you think that schools should be doing to help better your experience as parents in the community?
Well, from my perspective, I think it's always about just having stories that represent the diversity of family structures. Well, not just have it as like, right, we're bringing out that book and having that conversation for this minute. It's just readily available all the time, continuing the discussions and using the words. People are so afraid of using lesbian, gay, bisexual, transgender. Let's just get it out there. Kids are just sponges and they just absorb everything. Not question it, just accept it, and let's just start it very early on. I think
we're quite lucky in the sense that our schools and settings are open to conversation around things, so that's positive. I don't know if that would be everybody's experience, and you know, sometimes I feel like probably in a little bit of a bubble in terms of where I live and all that kind of stuff, so we're probably quite fortunate. But I think, yeah, we're quite lucky in that sense. Again, though, it does make you realise how, you know, there's all sorts of little things that will happen every day at school that will be having a bit of an impact on kids that, you know, are growing up from not just in adoptive families, but in families of all sorts of different makeups. And, you know, I can still remember going to like an intro day kind of thing where we sat down on the carpet and, you know, they were reading a book. Is it The Monkey Puzzle? I can't remember which one it is.
Yeah.
That's about a monkey not able to find their mom. And I was like, this is just a bit difficult. Like, I know there's going to need to be a conversation after this. And I'm not saying, oh, let's get rid of all the books that have got heteronormative references in them. Like, that doesn't make any sense. But there probably does need to be a little bit more thought around those kind of moments, even if it's just a bit of a preamble into moments like that, that put it into context, rather than just like, right, we're going to read a nice book and here it is. It's about someone that can't find their mum. You know, needs a bit more thought, maybe.
So often, you know, within the adoption process, often when you get to that point of the introductions, which is normally about 2 weeks long, it's a really important and emotional time, and but often there isn't things where you can see it and hear about it. And so what I've done for LGBT Adoption and Fostering Week is I've actually produced a video about my own experience of our adoption journey with some images and videos that we captured as part of that intro time and with our son. So if people were interested to find out a little bit more, wanted to hear maybe more about my story and see those behind the scenes of the intro time, they can like head over to our social media pages, Proud to Be Parents, and you can catch from those videos over LGBT Adoption and Fostering Week.
Absolutely. Yeah, I totally agree with you actually on that. I think when it comes to the whole LGBTQ plus community, being able to really have that, you know, have the stories, have the even the conversations with the parents, being open, and you know, as well as that, when it comes to like parents' evening as well, just really, really cater to the parents and you know, not make it feel like you're either hetero or you're other, if that makes sense as well. Amazing. Thank you so much, Toby, for sharing, and Matt as well.